Wait, what is the link for it? The one that you tweeted before, right?
Yes, yeah, it's capiche.fm/sass.
Okay, nice.
Okay, hi everyone. I think we've got a few people already listening. Thanks for tuning in today to SaaS Radio Hour. I've got a special guest on today, someone that I've emailed with years ago and used their software for years, but this is the first time we've actually talked. So Bastian Alliger, who's the founder of Allgeier, Bastian Alliger, the founder of Kirby CMS. Bastian, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for the invitation. Hi.
So Kirby is a flat file CMS that bit of my history with the product. I had used WordPress for my personal blog years ago, and at the same time was running a WordPress powered website as my day job at AppStorm, which is a now defunct website about reviewing SaaS software and iOS software and more. And our work install of WordPress was so annoying. We had older plugins that basically made it where you could never upgrade anything. It had random glitches and all this stuff. And so I would get done working on WordPress during the day with the systems that I really couldn't control. And then I would go write something for my personal blog, and it was like, this is no fun. I don't want to use the same thing here. And so I was looking around for something interesting to rebuild my blog with and came across Kirby, which caught my attention because it's built around Markdown, which was something felt important to me at that time, especially after writing in rich text in WordPress and formatting always messing up and such. But then also it was flat file. And so I had this whole system where you could basically save a Markdown file to a Dropbox folder, and a few minutes later it would just show up on my website and you'd have a blog post published. And that was what I thought was so awesome about Kirby. So Bastian, that's a bit of my story here. I'm curious, what's your story behind Kirby? What was the original inspiration to build a flat file CMS?
Yeah, so my background is I studied design 15 years ago. But got in development as a side hustle beside that. And the first thing I built was actually a bookmark service. So started in 2007 as a visual bookmark thing where you basically could collect images and videos and stuff. And it was called Zootool at that time. And I ran that for a couple of years. Never really successfully. So it started as a student project and then grew into some kind of monstrous early SaaS, if you want. I don't know if you would even call that.
You had subscriptions, right?
Yeah, I had subscriptions and a free account and all the typical stuff. And we had a couple thousand users, and it was really nice, but also it became extremely stressful in the end. And so when Zootool kind of died, I felt like I need something new to get my mind off it and start fresh. And then I did client projects, and one of the first client projects was a company that asked me for a really simple email solution, a newsletter solution. So they wanted to create newsletters, but they didn't want to use any of those tools that were available at that point. And they just wanted to create the templates, basically. They had a provider which would then send out the newsletters for them. They just needed a way to create those nasty HTML newsletters. And so the first version was, so I came up with this idea to create a little PHP script that just takes text files and combines that into a newsletter template in the end for them. It worked really well. It was super simple and really minimalistic, but I was quite intrigued by the simplicity of it, because after this massive database driven bookmarking tool with millions of entries, it was like a breeze of fresh air to work with just some files and not caring a lot about the complexity that the other stuff had involved. And then I was actually so intrigued by the simplicity of the file system that the next step was to create a full-blown CMS out of it. So friends approached me who just came up with their new design studio, and they asked me if I could build a portfolio website for them. And then that was the next step. So I built a CMS for them based on the same idea, folders and files, and those files would then contain a little bit of text, and the text would end up in their portfolio, and they could throw images into the folder. And that was that was the birth of Kirby, basically. So they loved it, and then they recommended it to their clients, and then somehow a chain reaction started. And at some point, I thought that, well, it would be really cool to make this the next step after Zootool.
That is so cool. Yeah. The weird thing is, I feel like I actually still need that because today at Capiche, we send our newsletters and such with customer IO. So you build HTML templates, and you can use their what you see is what you get editor. But it's, I don't know, it's typically, I find it better to just edit the HTML. And so I end up writing in Markdown, exporting that as HTML. And then pasting that into this crazy template I've built. There still doesn't feel like there's a great like one click, like go from just copying content into a email. Other than, I guess, hosted things like maybe Substack, but I've never used it enough.
Yeah, if we use Campaign Monitor quite a bit, and their editor is really great, but then you have to rely on whatever that kind of template they give you, or you have to get deep into writing your old HTML email templates. And I guess everybody who ever worked on HTML email templates know what a nightmare that is.
Oh man, yeah, just the mismatch of what works and what doesn't. I noticed randomly the other day, what was it? You can't do a drop shadow in gmail.com. It just doesn't render shadows. But you can in other email clients. It's like, okay, whatever.
So. I'm very happy that I'm way out of this. I don't have to deal with this anymore. So yeah, it's great. But it's nice to have this kind of control on one hand, and maybe create a good template as a first step, and then just pull in content simply from text files or whatever as another step. So yeah,
definitely. Yeah. So I wanted to loop back on the bookmarking. So with Zootool, I'm curious, what do you think kept it from taking off better and turning into an actual product? It feels like there's still gaps in this space. There was what was it? Delicious, right? The el.icio.us, and then of course Pinboard. It seems like one of the last few standing of like traditional bookmarking tools.
That's true.
Feels like there's still something in the space there that could be done. But what do you think went wrong really with Zootool?
The basic problem with Zootool was that I started it as my bachelor thesis project, and so that was the very first version. And as a bachelor thesis project, it didn't have to be based on any financial concept. So you build it and then they will come, as you say. they came, but then I never really got into how to get them paying for it. I love to focus on the tool itself, but not so much on the business side of it. So I was just not ready to create a company around it and build something out of it that would be sustainable. I guess nowadays there would be a better chance for it. It was also a bit early, I have to say. So it was at a time when Delicious was pretty big, but the idea of visual bookmarking, something that is so natural at the moment with Pinterest and other services like that, at that time it just didn't exist. And I think it was a bit complex because back then you had to solve it via bookmarklets. And browser extensions often didn't really exist yet. So the bookmarklets worked fine most of the times, but it was also a bit tricky to install them. So yeah, I think it was a bit too early for the idea and too early for me to become a proper businessman around it to make it into a viable product.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, we got Kirby out of it, so that works out.
I'm totally happy with that.
So Kirby's Markdown powered, or that was the original, one of the original draws to me, was that it was built around just plain files and Markdown formatting. I'm curious, I talked to the founders behind IA Writer and Ulysses several months back, and we talked about how they started using Markdown. I'm curious, for you, was that an instrumental part? Was there some time where you can remember you started using Markdown and you were like, this is the future and you wanted to build something with that? Or was it more of just, oh, this is a formatting system that's popular and it works, and you went with that?
No, I remember I built content management systems for client projects before Kirby, different types and different based on completely different concepts. But I think I'm a burnt child of what you see is what you get editors, especially in the early days. So from a developer perspective, Markdown always felt like such a simple and elegant solution that is just super solid in comparison to trying to emulate something like Word in the browser. And also it fits so well to the concept of Kirby. To like the simplicity was just reflected in that format so well. And I'm also, I mean, when I got into the web, Daring Fireball was one of the first blogs I read. And it all came together at some point. It was like, okay, this all makes total sense. So it was just the perfect building block for this new system. I mean, it's still based around the idea, but of course, nowadays we got away from that in some parts. So nowadays there is a visual editor. We have a what you see is what you get editor in Kirby. So we still have this concept around Markdown as a foundation, but nowadays it can be both worlds. So you could either keep it simple with Markdown, or you can go the full what you see is what you get way for people who don't feel comfortable with it.
Which originally Kirby had what I believe you called Kirby Text, right? Which sort of extended Markdown and added functionality that was not available just out of the box, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. The Kirby Text idea came mostly around some issues that I personally had with Markdown, to be quite honest. So the typical stuff where you always have to, when you don't regularly write Markdown, you always have to look up how to include an image or how to write a link or something. So the syntax sometimes seemed a bit weird to me in some places, as elegant as it is in other places. So, and then deep integration into the system where you could embed images easily, or you could link to internal pages easily, was just easier to come up with new tags built on top of Markdown as an extended version of Markdown, instead of trying to somehow get that into Markdown and then hack it in some way.
Which feels fairly common. Ulysses is another tool that does something like that, where they use Markdown by default, but then they have sort of their extra stuff on top of Markdown that adds, as you mentioned, image options. They have a sort of a visual UI for adding images. I know the Basecamp team had gone on a similar route where they had built Basecamp around textile formatting, which is a close cousin of Markdown. And then they switched to rich text. They were like, basically, you're trying to approach a wider user base. And when you get outside of just, I guess, developers and more technically inclined writers, that Markdown isn't as widely known and you need something that everyone understands. And so you end up sort of going back to maybe a more simplified rich text that's not quite as terrible as the original what you see is what you get editors.
Yes, exactly. This is pretty much the same route that we took. As well on the back end, if you think about it, I mean, we started as a purely file-based system that didn't have any admin tool at all. So you couldn't log into to Kirby. You would just work with folders and files in the first versions. You would have to FTP them or put them into Git or whatever, but there wasn't an admin interface. But of course, that's the same kind of the problem that we faced, where we got feature requests after feature requests for something where non-techie people would still be able to work with this if they don't dare touching a text file, or if they don't want to ever touch an FTP client. And nowadays we also have an admin interface, and then it's a ladder kind of. You take one step after the other. Extending Markdown was one, and then the next one is coming up with a what you see is what you get, simplified what you see is what you get editor on top of that. So exactly what you said.
And then almost you end up back where it started with a more full featured CMS that users don't necessarily interact with the files and the formatting, but they just use it to manage content. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it feels like, right, originally flat files were very emphasized. That was a big pull for Kirby. It was something, if you saw roundups of, you know, people wanting like an alternative to Jekyll, where you don't have to render files locally before you upload them, Kirby was often mentioned. And now in most recent versions, which my blog is still running on an older version of Kirby. The newer versions, though, if you look at the text file behind a post, it's not quite as human readable. Like, you can still read through it, but it's definitely not as simple as the original Kirby files were. And that's generally to be able to offer these additional features, right? Like, you had to add that to go beyond what basic Markdown would offer.
Yeah, our text files are still very human readable as long as you stick to Markdown, and you can still just have a in your admin interface, you can still totally opt in to just go for a text area or like an enhanced Markdown editor and just go for writing Markdown in there. But then on the other hand, we also now have a block editing feature or block field, which the more specialized what you see is what you get editing tool that we added in the last version, where you can then you can arrange blocks and write all kinds of content in there and embed videos and all kinds of stuff in a very visual way. And for that kind of feel, we then have to go to JSON and store the content in a more technical form that is not that human readable. But you still have both options. If you can still go the simple way or you can go the more visual way, whatever works best for your audience.
Which basically lets you approach a much wider range of users and let people build sites that work for their clients, even if it's basically they can build in the way that works well for them as a developer, and then they can also give something to the clients that's easy to use and simple and not something where they have to go dig into text files and worry about FTP.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Which feels like a shame to me with Dropbox. So used to with Dropbox, you could use their Dropbox CLI on a Linux server and use symlinking to sort of have Dropbox sync the files and then symlink them over to your Kirby folder and then render your site right there, which worked well for a while. And then they dropped symlink support, which sort of broke the entire Dropbox thing. And now I guess that's the thing that made me think, okay, doing the web interface is easier instead of trying to do this whole jumping through hoops to get a file uploaded from mobile or whatever. The web interface just makes it more approachable.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for us, I guess now it's getting interesting in terms of the topic for the podcast. For us, then we would have to think more in terms of a service instead of providing software as it is. And
right, definitely.
Yeah, and like a syncing server and how to set that up properly. And then you suddenly start working on similar features like Dropbox would, where you have to dig into the file system of the operating system and look at how you could solve that sync issue. And then it gets super complicated. And for us, it always felt easier to have an admin interface that directly does what we would do on the file system. So our admin interface is not a parallel universe. It's not digging around in some database that's hidden somewhere. It's just doing the same things that you would normally do on the file system. So it creates folders, it renames them, it creates new text files and writes the same kind of content in there. And you can use it side by side. So you can still work on the files and you can still work on the folders and it would show up then in the admin interface. So for us, that combination of the file system as a simple foundation, but on the other hand, the admin interface on, that works with it seamlessly, that felt more like a way that we could move forward and have better ideas for the future, or it's not that complicated to create then a full syncing service.
Which I wanted to touch more on the business model there and the potential for perhaps a hosted version of Kirby. But first I wanted to step back a bit because I feel like many people's exposure to a CMS often starts around a specific type of content, like blog post with WordPress or Ghost, or products with something like Shopify or WooCommerce. And so your CMS is built around this one content type. And then you can often shoehorn it and tweak it and make things like WordPress work for other content types, but you're almost taking something that was built for one thing and trying to push it into something else. And I feel like the interesting thing with Kirby is that you're starting with the IA, the information architecture, and thinking through your content and what you want to push onto your site and building your sort of Kirby setup around that with the fields you want and the formatting you want. And the dashboard similarly being customizable to the type of content you want. Yeah. But I'm curious, does that make it more difficult for people to get started using Kirby, where they basically, I guess, have to think through their use cases and how they plan to use Kirby before they can start using it, versus, say, something like WordPress, where out of the box it's already built for one use case?
Yeah, in certain ways, yes, I would say so. I mean, I think it's still fairly easy to use, and that's what we get as the feedback. So if you are just a little bit into development, front-end development, back-end development, you will find it easy to get started with. And we have a lot of designers who get started with Kirby and use that as a stepstone to get into development. So I think it's still quite simple to get started, but of course it's not a plug-and-play system. So you don't just throw it on the server and then you just install some plugins and then you are ready to go. You have to tweak it to the kind of site that you want to build, to the kind of content that you want to create. As you said before, you have to think a little bit about what you are actually going to do. But it also grows with you. So you don't have to make hard decisions in the beginning, and once you've made them, you can never undo them. That's quite the opposite with Kirby. I think that's mm-hmm. why it stays simple. You can always tweak it and move stuff around and rethink ideas. And so it never really gets in your way when you change your mind or if you have new ideas and you want to extend your project. But it's something that you have to spend a little extra effort in the beginning, but then you get exactly what you want. So our idea is, or I feel our philosophy behind it is that it always should feel customized to every site that has been built. It shouldn't be something that you just take out of the box and then it fits all projects, because that's not, in our experience, the reality of building websites. Most of the times, right, there are just so many different requirements. And I guess it's also like the experience that we had with our own client project. So everybody involved in Kirby has their own clients or had their own clients. And we know how different those projects are and how often requirements change. And so we try to make that as easy as possible and not focus on just getting everything done with plugins and simple clicks of a button.
Which I feel like is one advantage of being flat file based versus a database, is that you're far less likely to break something, and you can include the fields you want on one page and not include them on another page, and typically nothing's going to break, versus a database where if you're going to go add a new table or field, it can often be much more difficult to customize, especially if you're using out-of-the-box things like WordPress, where you're pretty much going to have to rely on plugins that do random things in your database that you're not quite sure what's even going on as a user.
Yeah, the file system is super transparent and it's also super flexible. I mean, this is why I love it still after all those years. I mean, I started Kirby in 2012, and whenever I look at it, I still think, not because I'm biased in terms of the system of Kirby itself, but more in terms of the beauty of the file system. Whenever I work with those files and those folders, I think it's just perfect. For most projects, it's really just so much easier to get started with and do whatever you want, do whatever the client wants, and you still understand what's going on there. I mean, just being in your Finder or in your Windows Explorer or whatever kind of file system browser you use, you always feel at home anyway. And that's kind of a great thing about it. So that feeling goes throughout the system, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that in mind, though, in the sort of debate, not exactly debate, but I think, well, tech press in general wants everything to be a debate. Tech press has this idea that files are going away, right? That in the future, perhaps, iOS seemed to be going in this direction for a while until Apple relented and put a file manager in the iPad and iPhones as well now. But that sort of files are contained inside of an application and that you share them from one app to the other. Instead of having a core standard computing style file experience. And so there's sort of this divide of, are files still relevant in the future, or does everything just get contained in one app, sort of like note-taking tools like Notion, where everything's just contained in one. And if you had to bet on one side, I guess you would bet on the side of files staying relevant.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I want it to be like that, and I can see also the direction that so many other services and tools take nowadays. So,
right,
I'm not sure. I mean, well, on the found under the hood, there will always be the file system.
Oh, obviously,
no matter how hard you try to hide it. I think it's super difficult to have those discussions around what will be the future of web development, or how well do we need developers or designers anyway in 2 years, because AIs are so smart right now and they will just build all the sites for us and the file system will vanish and then we don't have access to it anymore. I don't know. I mean, I think that stuff comes in waves. With most things in the tech world, when you you are a part of it for a long time now as well, and I've seen so many trends go up and down, and then suddenly everybody is super excited about going back to something that has been there for like years, and everybody's super excited about it. So I don't make any predictions around tech stuff in the future. I think we still have a few years left until we have to really worry about that.
There we go. It reminds me of the idea that I'm wanting to say, I forget who actually said the phrase, but at any rate, that there's two ways to make money, is bundling and unbundling. So that's often used to refer to the cable networks of, you could make money by bundling all the channels together and selling a package, or you could be Netflix and you could unbundle cable and sell individually. And almost feels like it's that kind of thing where, more than you make money by bundling and unbundling, it's like there's that cycle of it going back and forth between, oh, at first it felt like Netflix was bundling everything, and now it's like there's 35,000 streaming services, and so we're unbundled, and then someone's probably going to bundle it back together. And it feels like files are like that, where it's like at one point, well, 8-10 years ago when I first started using Kirby, has it been that long? How long has Kirby been around now?
Yeah, 2012, so we have our 10th anniversary next year.
Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, so something in that range when I would have first started using it.
Yeah.
Definitely files were in vogue. Dropbox was such a big deal. Mm-hmm. Kirby flat file CMSs were very popular for a bit there, just as a buzzword almost. And then you go back to, say, the iPad saying no files, and then now, you know, they're getting files again, and it feels like, yeah, it's definitely a back and forth type thing. With Kirby, though, if, say, you looked into the future and you tried to say, what would Kirby look like if you quit having files? And perhaps, could you imagine having a hosted version of Kirby? Something like, WordPress.com is an odd comparison, but I guess basically like a hosted version of standalone WordPress, or like Ghost.org does with their CMS. Could you imagine doing something like that with Kirby?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is something that has been in our minds for a long time. The team, we've discussed this over and over again, and there's actually quite some cool, interesting movement at the moment in the community. So we could end up with something like this sooner than actually later. But
interesting.
I don't really know how it will end up eventually. So right now, what we are, our target main audience is developers, agencies, in-house teams, people building sites for their companies, for their clients. So what we are currently mostly focusing on is more like providing something that would be a hosting service in terms of, yeah, making it super easy to install your sites and run them efficiently and scale them or whatever. But of course, I mean, we've discussed similar ideas as well. It could easily be something that runs a website or a certain kind of theme. It could also be, with Kirby, we could almost build pretty much anything, a headless CMS setup kind of idea. It totally depends it's difficult to tell where we are actually going in the end. It's not our main focus. For the core team, we are totally focused on the product itself. We are not focused on providing an additional service around it. So we are quite happy with our business model, and we want to grow that, and we want to keep the product growing, and that is our first priority. And then the services are always a great idea in the back, and we will see where it gets.
Interesting. Yeah. Seems like almost a white label type service would end up fitting the best then, where it's like a developer, a designer would sign up for potentially a service like that and use it to spin up multiple sites and manage them for all their clients.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of have a general way to administer them.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. I'm curious about Kirby's existing business model. So I've always found it interesting how it's somewhat similar to the open source model, where pretty much you go to Kirby's site, you can download the starter kit, you can download the core code of Kirby. Obviously, you can look at anything, and you could just run it. Like people, I'm sure you've probably had this problem with people just using the code and running sites without paying. But then you sell a traditional license, which strikes me now, and I'm thinking about it, almost like shareware, where you could use the software, but then it's like, hey, you know, if you could buy the license, it'd be cool. And then you sell upgrades. So there's new versions of Kirby, and there's upgraded versions there. How did you land on that as the model for this? And how's that worked out for you versus, say, selling subscriptions to, you know, you pay $100 a year and you keep getting updates to Kirby?
Yeah, that's interesting because when I started with that pricing model, right from the beginning, actually, when Kirby launched, many people thought that it was a stupid idea, basically completely would never work out. People would just run it without it. And there are so many open source solutions out there. Why would someone pay for it? And the background behind it was also, again, a bit based on Zootool, because it was just financially a disaster in the end. And so as my next step after Zootool, I said to myself, okay, this whenever I want to focus time on a side project again, it needs to be sustainable in a certain kind of way. And so I always knew from the beginning that I wanted it to be a paid license model behind it. And the first license price was actually a complete rip off of how Sean Inman back in the days sold his Fever and what was the other one?
Fever Mint. And Mint, yeah.
Fever and Mint. So I was a huge fan of his work, and I always thought, like, this is brilliant. He builds those little tools, and then he sells them for $30. And it seemed to be working quite well for him. So he was more strict about it. He never really published his source code anywhere. So you had to buy it first, and then you would get the source code. Yep. And I was like, okay, I could do this. But on the other hand, it's kind of ridiculous with PHP because, well, in the end, and I'm giving this away to developers, PHP developers, yeah, and everybody who's just looking at the source code can instantly find the way where the software would check its license and could probably just extract it within a few seconds. And I thought, okay, this is it didn't really make sense to me. And the other path that would be an option would be like obfuscating the source code, and that is also something that I felt was absolutely no solution at all. I thought, okay, why don't I just host it on GitHub and have the same transparency and the same benefits that an open source project would have? But on the other hand, I still try to get people to pay for it. In the beginning, I didn't have any expectations for it. I just thought, okay, let's put it out there. If someone buys it, that's fine. If nobody buys it, that's also fine. I did client work anyway, so there was no risk involved at all. And then it turned out it worked totally fine. I mean, people just liked it. And then they said, okay, why shouldn't I pay for it? And those who didn't like it, those who didn't like the idea of paying for it, they would never tell me anyway. So, I mean, this is the reason the concept behind it, taking care or spending more time finding people who pirate the license didn't make any sense to me. So I was just like, okay, let's give it a try. And if I don't have to care about this, then it's fine. If it ever becomes a problem, then let's see how to solve that problem. And the shareware comparison is quite fitting and on one hand, but of course we push it a bit more. So when you install it, when you use the admin interface, you will get the typical warning sign that you have to buy the license and you can't remove that unless you have a valid license for it. And so it doesn't work for client projects anyway. So this is as this is our main target audience, that the people who build websites for their own clients, most of the times they never really think about it at all. It's, I guess it's most of the times just a no-brainer for them that they buy a license for their clients.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't want to know the gray number about of people who just use it. I don't really care. As long as it works for us as a business, I'm happy, and that's cool.
I was going to ask, have you ever tried to check and see what the ratio is there of people just using it for free?
No. And
ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. And we also can't. So that's one part of our philosophy. We don't have any tracking built in. We don't talk back to our server in any way, except from that one little registration call. And other than that, I mean, since the software is online and on GitHub, like 100%, we would easily be falling on our own nose if we would build in some shady stuff into the into the software, and anyone could find it. So yeah, we would rather be super honest about it, and then people can go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious, with the code being open on GitHub, albeit not under an open source license, do you still get contributions from users where people will find bugs or things they want to change in the code and do a pull request and try to bring, sort of contribute back into your original code base?
Yeah, and that's kind of the really nice part about it. So we constantly get pull requests. We get a lot of issue reports that are really detailed and talk about us, about real problems in the source code, or help us fix stuff. So we get help with the translations. And yeah, that's really nice. So we benefit partly from the idea of an open source project. Well, we still call it open source. It's just not a free open source project.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. This has changed. It wasn't that much in the beginning, but the more the community grows and the more the trust in Kirby grows over the years, the more it became, yeah, just natural for people to send us a pull request or send us a quick comment on GitHub. And for most, it feels quite natural, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah, so you get the benefits of open source, but while still having a business model around your product without having, at least today, having to run a service version of your tool, where many open source projects seem like they fund either by selling support packages or by having to have a hosted version of their service. Things like, and now I'm drawing a blank, there's a open source search tool that they had basically had to change their license to keep Amazon from using their tool, just to sort of copy their whole thing. At any rate, there's all kinds of problems with existing open source business models. And it's interesting that you've managed to sort of thread that needle and build something around something that's slightly open source, but then also that has a business model with it. Daniel in the chat just added a question and said, maybe I missed this, sorry, but wondering if you could talk more about your business. Was this an outgrowth of your previous client work, or did you start building a separate company for Kirby?
No, I built a separate company for Kirby right from the beginning, or maybe now a year after I started, if I created a company around it, mostly for the liability, to avoid personal liability. But that's a different story. But I kept it as a side project still, even if it was its own company for 5 years. 5 years I was running client projects side by side to it. So it grew really organically and not that fast in the beginning. And then it picked up at some point, and I decided to ditch my clients and go full time for on Kirby.
Nice. How long did that take, you said?
Yeah, about 5 years, actually.
Five years, okay.
Yeah, quite a long time.
Yeah, this feels like quite a common tech model, though. The Basecamp team did a similar thing where they were originally doing client work, built Basecamp to sort of solve their own needs of what they needed around client work, and then that turned into a product that they just focused on full time.
Exactly, and I mean that it's a problematic thing at some point where you feel like, so it starts growing, and then you see like yourself, you still spend a lot of time on client work, and that kind of stands in your way of growing the side project faster. And then at some point you have this to balance this a bit between, okay, do I want to spend the time on client work, or do I want to spend the time on the side project? And then, so it's really interesting how it tips over at some point and you say, okay, now I have to focus on the side project, otherwise it will never go anywhere. And then you have to take a bit of risk and go and leave your clients behind. And it was an interesting journey, definitely.
But your client work seems like it helped influence what you built with Kirby as well. So it sort of played a mutually beneficial role, I guess, at least in the early days.
100%. I mean, my client work was building websites. So how do you call it? Like eating your own dog food?
Yeah,
100%,
right.
100%, yeah. So as I said before, I built other smaller content management systems before that in all kinds of versions. And there always was the problem that with every client project, the requirements were so different that I couldn't reuse them. So I had something built for one client, and then the next client had something completely different built for them. And I never was really happy with the solutions that I found, because they had the same issues in terms of flexibility. I've always felt like, it's hard to always have one system that works for everything. Of course, this is never really possible, but that's kind of the background with Kirby. I try to build something at least that could work for 95% of all projects that I personally worked on. And so, yes, it definitely had a huge influence on that.
That's so cool. So I wanted to look a bit forward into the future of Kirby. One big space in, of course, I approach content management systems from the more blogging side of things. Obviously, I think Kirby is often more used for managing content in individual sites that might not change quite as much as a blog would, and be used for publishing content as much as it seems like a lot of Kirby sites are more local restaurants and smaller businesses with just sort of pages of content. Though, of course, people like myself are running a blog with it as well. At any rate, I'm curious, a big thing in the sort of publishing CMS space, so WordPress and Ghost type products, is subscriptions and email newsletters now to sort of compete against Substack. And I'm very curious, since you mentioned your early work around Kirby starting with email, have you ever considered building something in that space, something that would sort of let people build a site and run email newsletter from the content they publish there, and maybe even firewall the content, sell subscriptions to the content, all in one with Kirby?
Honestly, not that much so far. I know there is a trend in that direction, but we have a very active community that gives a lot of feedback on ideas, where their problems are. And right now, what we are trying to do is actually focus on those problems and trying to be very close with our agencies and our freelancers and discuss their current problems that they have in client projects and solve those problems first and foremost. And in that space, we didn't have that kind of discussion very often yet. So they often, when they have this kind of problem, then they integrate some other service into it. So they use some other service to build that feature on top of it. It doesn't feel like it would be something that we want to focus on primarily at the moment. It doesn't, but I, as I said before, making predictions is super, super tough. And I feel like we always want to be flexible with where we can move to. And if that's becoming more of an issue for our clients, then we will definitely go there at some point. But right now, I can't really see it actually in our space, at least.
So what are some of the things that you're looking at adding next to Kirby that are probably the most in demand in your space right now?
So the last release that we released shortly before Christmas, that was a big milestone. That was the layout field and the block field. Both fields solve that problem of having a very interactive, rich media editing interface for all kinds of articles and microsites and anything else that comes in that direction. And so that was a really big step for us. And following up on that, as the next steps, we will definitely extend that and move it forward. And we always try to take our roadmap from the community, as I said before. So I don't want to spoil too much, actually. So
no worries.
Yeah, what I learned over the years, it's that there's nothing worse than making promises that you can't fulfill. So I think you should just have a close look at our feedback platform where we collect all the ideas and collect our roadmap and have a look at that. So we don't plan ahead more than just 2 months or something.
Perfect. So could you take us through a bit of that with the current dashboard and the current post and page layout system, where basically you can add widgets, you can add different text sections and such. What are some of the most interesting things you've seen built so far with the new Kirby's new flexibility there?
And what I love about it is that people really make it their own and build their own views and own page types. And as you said before, that's kind of the strength, I think, of our new admin interface since Kirby 3, is the option to make it really, to customize it really to down to the very last bit for every type of page that you have or every type of content that you have. And I've seen so many really cool things there. What I personally love a lot is when Kirby is used in unusual ways. So as a tool to handle not just websites, but like we have all kinds of internal tools where Kirby is used as whatever, as CRM or to run touch screens in a factory or as a publishing or as a ideas collection tool for a publishing team for newspapers. That kind of stuff really is exciting to me. As of course, websites are also super exciting, and there are some big projects out there where Kirby is used in very interesting setups. But I love it when people just take it and then build their own tools out of it. And that's kind of beautiful, in my opinion, when they use it more as a framework for their own admin interface.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's so flexible. You can just build something custom with it. You said that it reminded me of a friend that had built a site that I am not certain, I may have this wrong, but I believe it was basically doing a home server kind of setup where it was just locally hosted, and it was essentially just being a media streaming thing where he had, photo albums and, local videos and whatever. And it just gave him an easy way to, instead of, I guess, using the standard web-based FTP folder looking stuff to dig through files, he had built something out of, if I'm not mistaken, it was Kirby for an internal thing. And I'd entirely forgotten about that until you said that about people building in-house tools out of Kirby. So that's super cool to hear.
Yeah, I love to see. If you want to check out more interesting admin interface setups, you should go to kirbysites.com, which is that's mostly focused on websites. So people can submit their websites, but they don't just submit the screenshot of the website. They also submit a screenshot of their admin interface. And I think that's super interesting, because you can see when you scroll through the examples that the admin interface always looks different. It's never the same thing. It always kind of adjusts to the content that is being published there. And so it gives you an idea where it can go to. And then it could also be an invoice tool or a CRM, as I said, or anything else.
The site is very animated. That is not something you typically see nowadays. That's cool. The KirbySites.com. When you hover over a page, the sites just sort of like twist around in 3D. That is really cool. Very fun. Well, that's awesome to hear. I am curious. So you've mentioned building all these different tools with Kirby. You started your route here with bookmarking. I'm curious, what do you use for bookmarking today? Do you have any app you would recommend there?
Oh, no, I'm so terrible with that nowadays.
Awesome.
I sent myself emails.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I've gone the complete opposite direction.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's more tragic, I would say.
Yeah. I had for years used Evernote to clip sections of sites, and then that dropped by the wayside. And then, I'm really bad at it myself. I've tested out something called MyMind recently, which reminds me a bit of ZooTool, except it's been so long I'm not quite sure I'm remembering correctly. But at any rate, it's a real visual Pinterest almost style bookmarking tool. It hasn't stuck for me yet, but I should give it a bit more of a shot.
Yeah, this space is difficult. I feel it's very tricky to not become a hoarder with bookmarks. And so at some point, I just stopped doing it, basically. I remember there was a horrible email at some point that I got from a ZooTool user when he wrote me and said, yeah, he really loved it. But at some point, he realized that he could just use Google instead. And I was like, oh, okay, that's the worst kind of feedback. But nowadays, I feel kind of the same, I have to admit. So, yeah, I often
you're right.
Search instead of bookmark.
That is pretty much right. That's what I've ended up doing, is I just rely on Google. I'm like, I can find it again. Like, there are recipes that I cook often, and I know exactly what, just to Google for that exact recipe. And we'll re-Google it every time, which is sort of ridiculous, but I guess it works. Unless that site ever goes offline. So, yeah.
I hope nobody who is running a bookmark service is currently listening.
Yeah. We need to get Pinboard on here sometime.
Yeah, he is totally fine. I think I know him from conference that we did a couple of years ago, and I think he's very aware of that and just completely fine with it. I mean, I absolutely love how he runs his business and how he bought Delicious, and he's hilarious.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And he's an incredible writer as well. Went on a cruise, not cruise, a what do you call it? Like an exploration trip to Antarctica, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this Strike a Bell? Yeah. Okay. Had this hilariously detailed article about the trip going to Antarctica. Mm-hmm. Definitely not what you would expect from a bookmarking service.
No, he's also a brilliant speaker. So whenever you look up his for the audience, you should really check out some of his talks in the past. They are super brilliant.
Awesome,
Maciej Kiklowski. I hope I pronounce him correctly.
I was just going to ask, did you know how to pronounce his name? Okay. Yeah. After this, I'm going to shoot him an email and see if we can't get him on the show sometime.
Yeah, you should.
That would be awesome. This has been super awesome, Bastian. Thank you so much for chatting about everything with Kirby and your inspiration and what sort of brought you to build a CMS and what you've found interesting around Markdown and everything else that we've been able to talk about today. It's been awesome to hear your perspective.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the great questions. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. So glad to hear that. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in today. And we'll be back soon with the next episode of SaaS Radio Hour. That's all for today. Bye.
Bye-bye.